Hello, hello. We welcome you today to Love is Spoken Queer, Gospel Topics, LGBTQ plus voices. I'm Dustin Larson.
And I'm Hayden Davis.
Hayden, did we hot tub time machine back to 2020? What are you doing here?
You better believe it. I'm back. I'm back with a vengeance.
Back. I knew you were that kind of girl.
back again.
But welcome back, Hayden. How have you been since 2020? Because I believe that's the last time we spoke or you were on the podcast. How have you been?
Wow. Can you believe it's been that long? Also, the crazy thing is, it feels like it hasn't been that long. I'm like, oh, talked to you last week. Everything's the same. Everything is normal. But honestly, I'm doing pretty well. I'm happy that this new change of season has happened. I'm happy that I got my vaccine. I'm happy that I've been able to go outside a little bit. And I'm happy to be here with you.
Are you, though? No. 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 I'm glad that you're back. So, as Renee spoke about on a couple episodes ago, he is in El Salvador right now. And with the technical glitches that I encounter on just a regular basis, we thought it would be best for Hayden to Kelly Ripa his way back in to the podcast and serve as guest co-host.
I was truly honored and I jumped at the opportunity. So I'm happy to be here.
Yes. And what other month to have you in than Pride Month? Because again, this is one of my favorite months to basically share my love and joy with my friends and family and other. So Hayden, what's it like being an other?
I'll take what I can get with you. But honestly, it feels full circle. We were asked to do a podcast with another church member friend way back a couple years ago, back for Pride Month. So doing a podcast with you in June feels like habit at this point.
You know what else feels like habit at this point?
I'm getting a tingling. I'm thinking something that rhymes with shmaikulalulia.
Yes.
I think you're going to say our haikulalulia.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's been so long, and I'm glad that you picked up on my cheesy dad lead-ins to introducing the haiku leluya. But just like old times, you jumped right in there and stepped up to the plate and hit it out of the park. Am I getting all those sports references right? Sometimes I cross over between sports.
A swing goal score and 40 points for Gryffindor.
A swing goal? What's a swing goal?
No, that's the point. I don't know. I don't know sports. How about I do my haiku leluya first this week, because I think I'm a little rusty, and so we'll do the best for last.
Okay, sounds good. So before you get into that, let me introduce the topic, and it's going to be a fun one for me because I like to do this in a joking way. But this week, we're going to be talking about Doctrine and Covenants, chapter 63, just one this week because it's a pretty significant chapter, and we're going to be looking at it through the queer perspective of criticism. Which is one of Hayden's favorite thing to experience. But before we get into it, Hayden, give me something to criticize.
Zion is being built. We can play a part or not. Even criticism.
Okay.
Like I said, I'm rusty. It's a lot of concepts simplified into abstract sentences.
Yeah, no, but I love that you threw Zion in there because I think the last three of my haiku leluyas had Zion in it because that's what the theme is. But you did pretty well. You did pretty well for coming right into it cold turkey or quitting it cold turkey and coming right into it like a cold read. But yes, so here's my haiku leluya on criticism. Criticism can cut deep when used to cause harm. Choose to love instead.
Oh, I love that one.
Yay. Well, you better. No, I'm kidding. But anyway, so Hayden, I know you're still a little rusty, but we did this every ball, so you shouldn't be gagging. What first comes to mind when you hear the word criticism as a queer person of faith?
I mean, it's really funny that we're doing this today because I went to church today and I've realized that like the last couple of years going to church, I've been very critical. I've come with a very, you know, critical eye. I want to make sure that the ward I'm a part of, the church I'm a part of, is doing what I think it needs to and addressing the things that it needs to. I feel like as queer people, we kind of get pushed to an outside. We kind of get a lot of things flipped on its head. So we get to come and bring a new vision. And often the criticism we have brings a lot of light onto important things. What do you think of when you think of criticism as a queer person?
I think it's a given as a queer person of faith and as a queer person in general, because we kind of straddle between the two worlds of conservative and then kind of liberal, and as far as like political beliefs and then also spiritual and authentic. It's just no matter what we come up against, like in our lives, we're going to be met with criticism. And we're going to talk a little bit about that later on in the chapter. Like if we are in our queer circles, we're criticized for being spiritual or religious. And then when we're in our religious circles, we're criticized for being queer or, mm-hmm. or living our authentic lives. It really takes a tough skin to kind of weather through all that criticism and to know what criticism is beneficial and what criticism is really just meant to hurt. And I think it takes time and patience and practice to kind of cipher through all of these quote-unquote doctrines or policies or even general conference sort of talks or publications from the church and kind of cut through what is truly beneficial and uplifting to us and what is just pushing a personal agenda or what is just criticizing for the sake of criticizing, and there's really no depth to it. And I think that's something that we as queer people of faith really need to kind of be able to master on kind of deciphering what is meant to help us grow and what is meant to hold us down.
Yeah, I think often as queer people, we get so much criticism that we get really good at dishing it. And so as we take it, we can give it. But you got to decipher which part is really relevant, which of it is actually useful and which isn't. That's a good point.
Yeah. And another thing too is, like you were saying, you go in kind of with your defenses up. And I do exactly the same thing, because today is the first time I went back to in-person church, because back home, there was no way I was going to go to in-person church because they're all sorts of behind the times as far as vaccines and mask mandate and all that stuff. So I wasn't even going to risk it. My parents were, of course, not going to risk it either. So it's just different time, different place. Like that's a different story for another time. But anyways, so, but then when I came back to New York City, it took me a couple of weeks to kind of get back into the rhythm of things and get my social anxiety back in order. So I finally went to church today, and it was such a great feeling to be amongst my ward again and to just feel that loving acceptance. But I'll have to admit, it took a little bit of warming up because there were some new faces in the crowd. We had some kind of stake leaders in the crowd too, to kind of give sort of stake business and announcements and stuff. So I was a little bit hesitant to kind of get up and bear my testimony, because I usually do it every Pride month so they can like hear me. I'm here, I'm queer, listen to my testimony sort of thing. And so I did that today. But at first I was kind of hesitant until the second counselor basically gave a shout out to me saying, "It's so great to see everybody here. I don't want to name names, but Dustin, it's so great to see you here again," because I haven't been there for like 7 months. And so I'm like, oh, okay, might as well bear my testimony. But as soon as I went up there, one of the first things I saw was someone was wearing a rainbow mask, and it was one of our allies in the ward that was wearing their mask. And so all of my defenses went down. And I was like, you know what? This ward is one that I've loved for years now. I know they're not going to criticize me. They're going to accept me for who I am. So I'm just going to bare my soul and bare my testimony. And I was able to do that, which kind of, I think, alleviated the rest of the room to kind of go up and share their testimony as well. Because I think as we as queer people of faith, when we show our vulnerability, it is so much more powerful than, say, a straight member. And not saying that our experiences are better than the other. It's just we have a lot to go through in order to gain our testimony and to then share it openly and outwardly in a church that kind of likes to criticize that sort of quote unquote lifestyle.
100%. Yeah, we were talking about struggles in church and why we keep coming back to church in Sunday school today. And I had to share a comment, and I was like, we kind of have to recognize there's even spiritual privilege. You know, for a lot of people, it's easy to stay a member. You know, sometimes all that they're struggling with is like remembering to pray every day. And there's people like you and I who going to church is so much more mental and, you know, emotional exertion. Sometimes I'm like, the gospel is difficult to deal with. And so I really appreciate when I see people who support and acknowledge and just try to empathize with us as we try to navigate, you know, that murky water of spirituality and identity.
And what I really liked in this chapter is God is basically, he's explaining kind of like criticisms he has of the members of the church at this period of time. And kind of that's to combat their criticism of the leaders at the time, because I forget who it was, but someone was only wanting to build their testimony if they saw a sign. And when they saw that sign, they had their testimony, but then it then kind of waned after a little bit because it wasn't a strong testimony. So this is kind of like God's take a seat sort of chapters where he's like, you've been doing good up to this point. Here's mainly like your 90-day probationary kind of meeting. Like, I'm going to now sit you down. Yeah. I'm going to tell you some of the things I'm seeing that I like, some of the things that I don't like, and then this is how you're going to correct it. And I really love that he did that, because he really called out a lot of people too, kind of using his name in vain. And mm-hmm. when we grow up, we think using the name in vain is swearing. We're not supposed to swear. But when really not using the Lord's name is vain is not using your words of like hate or bigotry mask in the Lord's words. Like, you're not speaking yeah. for the Lord when you don't have the authority or even the heart to speak for the Lord. And I think this is right. him just basically saying, I gave you these commandments. Some of you are following it. Some of you aren't. And he gave a little bit of those examples. And one of those examples was the taking the Lord's name in vain, which is, don't speak on my behalf if you don't have the love and acceptance to back it up.
100%. And yeah, misrepresenting God is no good. And I feel like it's often easy to, as a member of the church, or if we believe it's the true church, then a member of the true church, thinking that you've got some sort of like monopoly on God's views and opinions. So I think it's a great thing where he calls out a lot of bad behavior, one of which is using his name in vain and looking for signs. It's a lot of stuff that I'm sure was happening a lot back in the early days of the church.
I like how he kind of precurses his criticism by saying, what you're going to hear is hard, and sometimes what you're going through is hard, but I'm here for you to kind of course correct, but then also give you support, knowing that once you do course correct, if you continue going in the course that I provide for you, I'll always be there for you. And one of those verses that jumped out at me that kind of relates to that is Doctrine and Covenants 63, verse 47. And he says, he that is faithful and endureth shall overcome the world. And I said, as a queer person of faith, I will likely be criticized by many who I encounter. It is my goal, through faith and with God's help, to learn from the constructive and endure the negative. This will help me overcome the world and return to him a full and authentic being. So I've been discussing with Renee throughout the Doctrine and Covenants how closely I see their history and our history now as queer individuals. There's a lot of overlap, because when the church was restored, there wasn't much knowledge or a roadmap to follow. Like, they were kind of like learning as they're going. And I think us as queer yeah. people of faith, we're doing the same thing. There's no set handbook. There is, but it needs to be edited quite a bit. But there's no
game plan.
Yeah, there's no direct roadmap. And so we're kind of the early saints for the queer people that are coming behind us. We're kind of in the middle. We're in a really great generation. And I was talking to Renee about this one time too, that the millennials are this really great bridge generation, because they know what it's like pre-internet and they know what it's like post-internet. They know what it's like to follow right. tradition, and they know what it's like to respect certain traditions, but then alter it based on the current days and times. So I think we're a really bridge generation. And like we were saying before we were coming on this podcast, how there's inklings of new revelation coming that may mimic restoring the blacks to full members in the 70s, restoring restoring LGBTQ members to full active members in this day and age, because the old guard is kind of fading away and the new guard is coming in, and the new guard is a lot of millennial age. And I really think that once that changing of the guard happens, the criticism that we are hearing from the church will become actually activism to kind of support the members that need it the most.
It's very interesting that you said that, because one of the scriptures that I was going to talk about was verse 23. And it says, but unto him that keepeth the commandments, I will give the mysteries of the kingdom, and the same shall be in him a well of living water springing up into everlasting life. And so I feel like a lot of days, as queer pioneers, as similar spiritual pioneers, there's a lot that we don't know and that we want to know and that we kind of need to know in some cases. And so when I came to this and read all of it, it was a lot of, you know, don't do this, don't do that. But there was this hope saying, you know, the people that try to bring the kingdom of God, those who obey the commandments, try to follow God, they will find the mysteries, they will understand them, and that the truth will come like an overflowing well. You know, sometimes I feel discouraged or tired or frustrated, especially with spiritual stuff as a queer person. And it's inspiring to know that, like, there can be a well that we can draw from and that we can feel good about it when we're trying to do what's right.
Yes, definitely. And thank you for sharing that, because it kind of reminds me of another scripture that kind of jumped out at me, is because sometimes the things that are frustrating to us is because people are talking on behalf of God when really the feeling's not there. And that's that sort of verse that jumps out at me is still in 63, because there's only one chapter that we're talking about, but it's in verse 61. And it says, "Wherefore, let all men beware how they take my name in their lips." And I said, as a queer person of faith, I know that negative criticism can cut deep and should never be cloaked in God's name. His words should never be weapons, and I should speak out when they are. And I think that's one of the things that makes you tired, is because we're constantly on the defense. One minute we're feeling the Spirit as we're doing scripture study, and the next minute we're on Facebook and we're seeing asinine, for lack of a better word, news articles that are posted in like the church news that are supporting bigotry and outdated sort of mindsets. And it's really tiring. But if we remember that, if there's really no, you can tell when there's no depth to a certain sort of talk or a certain sort of kind of opinion piece or things that should be labeled opinion pieces. And when you kind of look past that and you see that there's really no benefit for you in it, then that's something you should put to the side. And you can actively criticize their criticism and be like, you know what, this isn't raising me up. This isn't making me feel the Spirit. So I'm going to just put it to the side, and I'm going to go back to the scriptures where I was feeling the Spirit and kind of rejuvenate from what this particular article made me feel. And I don't want to tiptoe around what the article is, but I was on Facebook and I was seeing this article being shared around. At first, I didn't pay much mind to it because it was like, and one or two people were talking about it. But then when I saw like a whole bunch of other people talking about it, I zeroed in on it and I decided to read it. And it was recently posted in the church news, and it's by Elder Ted R. Callister, and it's titled "A Fence at the Top or an Ambulance at the Bottom." And I'm not even going to get much into it other than my criticism of his criticism, but I'll post in the show notes for people to read and to make their own judgments. But what I read from it is, I feel like if they're ever going to cross into kind of a political arena as far as church doctrine goes, like you pick a lane. If you're going to be talking specifically about church doctrine and like gospel principles and that sort of thing, you can use scriptures as references, like more power to you. But once you start veering into a political lane and you don't have any sort of sources from different sort of studies or academic sort of things to back it up, then basically it's mainly just your opinion. Like, I don't think scriptures are allowed to back up talking about how abortion is a bad thing or pro-choice is the end of the family. Like, I don't think you could use a scripture to support that when you don't have the data to back it up. And so I was just thinking as reading through this article that it's a lot of kind of hollow sort of repetition of past kind of general authority talks or sort of outdated sort of mindset of preaching. And it didn't really raise me up. And it was more of like an attack on LGBTQ people, attack on single men, single women, attack on low-income families. Like, they were just blanket statement, all these things about how we can make the nation better. But yes, if you come from a place of privilege and a place of affluence and you're, I'm going to say it like from a white upbringing, everything he says could work. But there's so much more intricacies that go into saving the quote unquote family that he doesn't even mention, that he, I think, purposely leaves out because it doesn't fit his agenda at this time. So this is the only reason why I bring it up, is I think this is an example of someone within the church criticizing us as a community, where we need to take our critical eye and realize that this has nothing to do with benefiting us. Yes, we should be aware of it because that idea is out there, but we should pay very little attention to it because it's just going to bring us down in the long run.
It's such a complicated, well, it's not that complicated, but it's interesting to see articles like this that are so politically charged. And it's just interesting what the church chooses to engage with politically. So I think they could be like such a stronger voice for other important things if they're going to do political stuff. But it seems like they're really just pushing for that proclamation of the family stuff, which, okay, that everybody gets to choose. But yeah, it's a weird serve. in my opinion.
Yeah, and if you kind of break down his words and you say there's a fight on the family, there's a fight on the family, it's the breakdown of the family, it's the breakdown of the family. In this day and age, the family isn't the nuclear family anymore. It's not mother, daughter, 2.5 kids. You have single parent families. You have grandparents as parents. You have same-sex couples as parents, and they raise just as nurturing and just as successful of an individual as if you had two parents together. It's almost like they're trying to fit a square into a round hole where the family looks a lot different, and you can still take the values of what God wants as the family and put it in a family that looks different. There's also multi-generational families. Like the Hispanic lineage that I come from in Mexico, we have multi-generational families. We have all these different families that live under one roof. Do they have to live in under one roof? Is that what determines a family? Does it, if you have your grandparents living with you, does that determine, like, what exactly determines a family? And I think that needs to be updated. And when you update it to the common definition of a family, a lot of these fit into the proclamation of the family in the sense of what it's trying to promote as far as upbringing and nurturing and growing in the gospel and all this stuff. You can have that with a single mother and a child. You can have that with a lesbian couple. You can have that with a bisexual couple. Like, that can be there. Just because it doesn't fit the cookie cutter version of a family doesn't necessarily mean that it's not a family, and therefore uphold the proclamation of the family.
Yeah. I mean, the whole tone of it feels a little dated because he starts by asking, like, what is the greatest challenge of our nation today? And he's like, you could say, you know, national security, immigration, gun control, poverty, racism, crime, pandemics, climate change, like all these things. And he's like, those are important, but really it's moral values and the family. And you're like, I hate to see that they've tried to like extrapolate the two. Why can't we work on solving a lot of these other problems to then benefit families and work? You know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no. And to bring it back kind of to the scriptures as well, like God was saying that a lot of you are fulfilling the commandments and following the commandments, and a lot of you aren't. And for him to bring up like taking my name in vain, that's a huge thing to him. Like, I believe, is that the first commandment? Thou shalt love thy God and no other God before me. It's commandment.
Yeah,
it's one of the top three commandments. Anyways, yeah. I have to go back and refresh my commandments, but that's an important commandment. So before we get down to adultery, which they talk about in these scriptures, or the law of chastity, right, we need to first make sure that we're checking off the ones that have to do with God, which means taking his name in vain, which means don't speaking on his behalf if there's hate in your heart. So just to bring it back to the scriptures, that I think it's, again, what we're trying to say is we just need to develop a critical eye on what is criticizing us for benefit or what is criticizing us to cut us down, so that way we are more easily overcome by these hurtful words.
100%.
And before we got on this recording, you actually brought to light an article that you came across that I thought we were talking about the same article, but yours is actually more in a positive light, and I will post it in the show notes as well. But Hayden, do you want to give a brief kind of synopsis of this article, so that way we can kind of bring the feeling a little bit up? So, because I'm getting fired up, so I'm sure the listeners out there can be fired up as well. But let's bring it calm. Saw this real fast.
Well, it is an article from the Salt Lake Tribune that someone shared with me, kind of just talking about how, you know, in the 70s, the church had to take a big pivot and kind of reassess what it was doing and the social repercussions that were coming because of it. And so, you know, the choice was made that Black men could hold the priesthood and should. And we all agree that that is the choice that should have been made, and that it is a, you know, a choice that God wanted to happen. He kind of explains that like very similar things are happening in the church right now, that the church is at a similar crossroads with queer members and deciding what to do with these gay members who really genuinely want to be a part of the church and do good and continue the work of the Lord, but feel that purely by definition, they have been excluded and cannot be members. Like, I think, Dustin, you and I definitely feel that. I want to be a big part of my ward, but purely by rules, I cannot be in the same way. It talks a little bit about how revelation is scattered and, you know, can take different times and different ways and avenues. And so we may be looking at something in the near future. And that sounds so complicated because I'm like, I don't want to spread rumors or elicit false hope in people. But it's interesting just to think about how the church now, and especially with the queer issue, it's Pride Month. The first Pride was in 1969. if we think about the way gay people were treated, even in the 90s, even in the early thousands, now it is so much more common to have queer people in people's lives, you know? I think it's just a very interesting thought to think about where we're going and where the church is going and how they're kind of going to cope with all of these changes that are happening socially and happening culturally.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, because it brings to mind that apparently there's going to be all these kind of like leadership councils that are happening in all these different areas. And one of the topics that they're going to be focusing on is what makes a member want to be active and want to be a member. And they want it to be a very diverse group of individuals on these membership councils. Not a membership councils. What did I call it before? Leadership councils, because a membership council is now is now code word for disciplinary council. But anyways, I digress and I correct myself. So they're wanting to have a diverse group of people on these leadership councils, and they want it to be racial diverse, and they want it to be sexual orientationally diverse as well, because they're seeing that as the generation Ys, X, Zs, or whatever, I don't know, past millennial, but anyways, but as they're rising up, they're more comfortable with the fluidity of sexuality and gender expression, that it's not going away anytime soon. And it's infiltrating the membership on a large scale. So this is something that they want to kind of look into and possibly nurture. And so I think that's a step in the right direction as well. And I really am grateful that they're starting to do that. I hope it's just not kind of like a one and done. Oh, this is what we learned. We're just going to go back to our own ways. But I was thinking about this in church too, and you reminded me with your comments. And as I was thinking about what they could possibly discuss on these leadership councils, is the membership of the church is extremely diverse, and the queer members aren't the quote unquote stereotypical queer members where they're out loud, proud, they dance to the rhythm of their own drum and they don't need religion. These are normal, everyday members that just happen to be queer as well. And I really think that if the church looks at them that way and they kind of sort of adapt around that sort of member, I think it'll be a more inclusive place. And I really see these, I'm not going to call them revelations that you're talking about in this article. I really see them starting to come forth, because the world is changing, and it's not the destroying of the family sort of thing. It's that our minds are now opening up on a more Christ-like level to accept everyone as they're supposed to be accepted, because I think it's just the world playing catch up. Like, I don't think it's us being like, oh, this is the mark of the end times. Yes, it's the mark of the end times, all the contention it's creating, but I don't think the acceptance of LGBTQ members is the end times. It's us catching up to being a more Christ-like member, like we're being commanded to be.
100%. And queer people have so much to offer, a lot of really great, important insight and community and knowledge. And so it'll be interesting. I think it'll be definitely something that will develop in the next couple of years. And I think places like this, your podcast, other groups are starting these dialogues and at least beginning a conversation about it.
Yeah. And I want to kind of leave the listeners with some inspiration to go about with them, because sometimes Pride Month can be a little hard for certain people because they're not out, or they feel like they can't be safely out, or they can't be as out as they would like to be. And sometimes they can't find the comfort within the church. So what I want to do is kind of give them individuals within our community that kind of sort of overlap the activist and kind of the work that we're doing right now. So that way, if they ever feel discouraged finding hope within the church, they can look towards these quote unquote queeros. And I didn't make up that word. I found it somewhere. I can't remember where I stole it from, but it's queeros, like Q-U-E-E-R-O. Look towards these queeros to find inspiration, to find determination, to find motivation. And so I found a person that I see as my personal queero. And Hayden, I asked you to find someone as well. Who would you like to go first to kind of share this with the listeners?
You can go first.
So it might not be a surprise to you, but I chose as my queero Howard Ashman, because the more that I'm delving into his history and just how much influence he had on the Disney classics that I grew up with, I'm realizing that he basically was the reason why I love Disney, because the movies that came out that he was a huge part of, from executive producing to writing the lyrics for, to almost like calling a lot of the shots, are the movies that came out while I was coming of age and I was growing up, and that made me love all of the Disney movies that came before him and that came afterwards. So when I pinpoint down why I love Disney, I can really point to Howard Ashman. And even Roy Disney, Walt Disney's nephew, said that Howard Ashman was the closest person to Walt that has come through Disney in a very long time at that period of time where he was working. And I think it's because Howard Ashman didn't hide away who he was. There were certain things he hid away because of the times and because it was protecting him and those around him, namely his diagnosis of HIV, because back then it was a death sentence and there was so much stigma around it that he could risk losing his like medical insurance if he takes an HIV test. And so the times are different back then, but he was just unapologetically himself. He was out loud, boisterous. He was very stubborn in certain things. He was very meek and mild in other things, but he loved storytelling and he was a master at storytelling. And I find that I really love telling stories as well. And so when I'm developing things for this podcast, or I'm even like giving a presentation at work, I think of like, how can I tell this story? And I always go back to my roots on where did I first learn storytelling? It was from these Disney movies as part of the Disney Renaissance. And who was the ultimate storyteller? Howard Ashman. And so I just want to thank him for the blessings of storytelling and of laughter and love that he bestowed upon this world in the short period of time he was able to do that, because he was taken away too soon. And so, listeners, if you feel like you're down and out or you just need a little bit of inspiration, just turn to Howard Ashman. If you have Disney Plus, watch his documentary, and he will let you know that there's a lot in him that you can relate to, especially when fighting the fight in kind of a roundabout way. He wasn't an out loud and proud activist, but he had this way of weaving in the fight for our rights into his storytelling. So that's my queero that I would like to share with the listeners out there. Hayden, what about you?
That's amazing. I mean, I'm going to have to watch that documentary. I never got to see it, so that'll be very good. I wanted to talk about Harvey Milk, who gets a lot of recognition for his work, but he was the first openly gay elected official in the history of California and did a lot of work in San Francisco to kind of help break down the stigmas of queer people, mostly in the 70s, back when things were kind of upside down. He did a lot of work to kind of stop discrimination for people based on sexual orientation and did a lot of work in his community there. He actually was assassinated by this disgruntled, you know, city supervisor, but had put into work and started a motion on a lot of the gay liberation movement and helped a lot that way. What really helped make Pride tick in my brain was back at the Pulse shootings in Florida, where someone shot up a gay bar and killed so many people. I think I thought about being gay as just something that happened. But once I realized that people literally want to kill you, it kind of made me feel a little bit more energized and proud and wanting to kind of be a little bit more vocal and a little bit more visible to show people what life can and should be like. And Harvey has a good quote about encouraging everyone to come out and encouraging those who are in the closet to come out purely to show that we exist and that we are your brothers and we are your friends and we are your teachers and we are the people in your community. We are not crazy. We are kind, loving people who simply want the respect and the rights that other people get to enjoy. So that's my queero for this month.
And to add on to that too, is we're the people sitting next to you in the pew. We're the people passing the sacrament.
100%.
We're the people up bearing our testimonies. Yeah. So I think that's where we can kind of bring it back to the kind of spiritual and queer person of faith perspective too, is if you're 100%. In a safe place to come out. So that way you can show the people around you that they know someone. And so then they should care about you. And to bring it back to the subject of criticism, if you don't know exactly how to handle criticism of your authentic self, turn to these queeros and see how they handled criticism. Sometimes they were out and bold and they were very in your face about it. And sometimes they took it in stride and they realized that this is something that I have to grow from. Howard Ashman had flops on Broadway, had hits on Broadway, and then ended up influencing three of the most iconic Disney pictures. And then Harvey Milk led the way to us having so many out loud and proud LGBTQ members in government, in the public arena, just like, and both of them that they have in common was they were taken too soon. So we can take the motivation that they gave us and continue their work, because Lord knows that if they were continuing their work at this day and age, they would be at the forefront of a lot of the change that's happening right now.
life is tragically short. I think both of their lives is a good reminder that there's a lot to be done and we got to get to work.
Yes, definitely. And I guess to kind of round up our discussion today is to kind of bring it back. I think to sum up what we were saying is God is going to criticize us in order to make us grow. And that criticism should come from God himself. And if it comes from man in a hateful way that is cloaked in God's words, we just need to remind ourselves that that is not criticism from God. That is criticism from man. And we need to turn our sights back to God and find our alignment back with his criticism. And if it's hard to take criticism, turn to people that have gone through it before us and learn how they went through that criticism.
That is so funny because I was just going to reference in the scriptures where it talks about all of these bad things and God's like, don't do this and do that. He actually talks about how Satan is the one who's going to stir up anger. And he's like, that's not how it's going to work. If you are feeling anger that like to the shedding of blood, that is a problem. And, you know, Harvey Milk was murdered. That's exactly what Satan wants, to get people angry and get people fighting and fully to stop what these other people are doing. And that's wickedness. That's evil.
Yeah, so remember that contention comes from the adversary. Critical critique and love comes from God. So find a way to differentiate the two and learn how mm-hmm. to combat and embrace both when you come across it. And I think right now is a good place to take a short break. And welcome back for the break. You're listening to Love is Spoken Queer. And Hayden and I have just finished discussing Doctrine and Covenants chapter 63 through the queer perspective of criticism. And Hayden, based on our discussion today, what do you feel called to do?
I think I'm going to, first of all, do my queer history and learn some more about queeros that I want to emulate in my life. But I also am going to take the criticism that I feel about the church, about my testimony, about my life, and I'm going to try to work it into reasonable action. I'm going to get to work. You know, they say, don't complain about things, create a solution or something like that. But I'm going to try to do that, make sure that I'm taking all this criticism and putting it into work.
I think I'm going to second that. And I'm going to get back to, usually I'm really gung-ho about brushing up on my queer history. And this year I've just been lagging on it because it's hard to get back into the rhythm of the city. But I think I'm going to really brush up on it. But then at the same time, brush up on church history as well, because we're reading about the Doctrine and Covenants. So that way I can find more overlaps, because I'm finding a lot of overlaps in just the Come Follow Me curriculum. But I want to now find larger overlaps between our queer history and Doctrine and Covenants and church history to show that there really isn't much of a difference. So that way, when we are criticized about our existence, we can be like, hey, we're just the pioneers in this day and age, and we're doing exactly the same thing that the first saints were doing.
I love that.
And listeners, if you'd like to contribute your thoughts on this episode, or if you have criticisms that you've undergone that you survived or you thrive through, or you're just having problems dealing with and you'd like some advice on how to kind of sort your way through them, feel free to send them in to lovespokenqueer@gmail.com or find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. And before we go, Hayden, do you have any last words you'd like to share with the listeners to take with them throughout the rest of this week?
Yeah, only that this is Pride Month, and I think a lot of people have complex feelings about Pride. Some people don't understand it. Some people think it's unnecessary. Some people love it more than anything. I think it's just a great time to put queer issues forward in our minds and in our conversations so that we can talk about things and learn about things and kind of readdress how we as queer members navigate our lives and our queerness, and also as allies and people who maybe don't identify the same, but can learn and can empathize and kind of understand. So I encourage everybody to lean into this and enjoy the month, watch a movie about some queer history, or talk to your queer friend, or support a local shelter or community group that can help queer people. I think it's a great time to reinvest in the community around us.
Yes, thank you for sharing that. And you actually reminded me of a topic I wanted to touch upon in our discussion that I forgot to bring up, but I'm going to just do it now as my last words, is a lot of times people feel pressure to celebrate Pride the right way. And they feel like they're critiqued if they don't celebrate it the right way, or they feel like they'll be criticized if they don't celebrate it at all. But I just want to say that if you are a member of the queer community, there is no wrong way to celebrate Pride. Just you existing is celebrating Pride. And you can do it as outwardly and loudly loudly as you want, or you could do it as quietly as you want, whether that's being in a pride march, whether that's blasting on social media, or whether that's just you quietly reading through queer history on your own. There is no wrong way to celebrate pride if you're part of the community. That's a completely different story if you're not part of the community. There is a right way and a wrong way, and the right way is to look towards the people in the community and take their lead. And that's with any sort of demographic out there. If you're not part of that community, if you want to celebrate that community, take their lead in order to do that. So those are the last words that I want to share with our listeners out there.
Amen to that.
And the last thing we have to do is thank our listeners for listening, and remember to always be true to you
and to love one another.
Until next time, bye.
Bye.
You've just listened to another episode of Love is Spoken Queer. If you want to join in on the conversation, feel free to send us an email at our Gmail account, which is lovespokenqueer@gmail.com, or send us a direct message on our social channels. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you really love our episodes and our show, make sure that you rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. That is the fastest way for us to share our words with everyone out there. So again, thank you for listening.